This episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, it's been a place to grow, connect, and serve. Of course, during this time, no in-person gatherings are allowed, but that doesn't mean that church is canceled. You can find their live stream on Sundays at 9 a.m. on their website, canbyfoursquare.com, or on their Facebook page. Services and other encouragement is available on their Facebook page anytime. Just search for Canby Foursquare Church.
This episode is also brought to you by Chris Salee, your local health markets insurance agency. Creative solutions for your health, Medicare, and life insurance needs. Personalized advice at 503-678-5768. Welcome to the Canby Now podcast,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
The next time Canby's 5,000 public school students set foot inside their classrooms, it will be a new school year. As many expected, Oregon Governor Kate Brown has followed the lead of neighboring Washington State in extending statewide school closures through the end of the current academic year to slow the spread of the novel coronavirus. I know this is certainly not what any of us were hoping for, she said during a press conference Wednesday afternoon announcing the decision, but it is truly the best decision for our system. Though school buildings will remain closed through August, it does not mean an early start to summer vacation for students or teachers. Public education will continue, just in a different way. In the words of Governor Brown, school and learning will continue as best we can using remote means.
Every state in the country is struggling with these decisions. I am proud of the way our students have navigated this new world of unknowns and the efforts of our teachers, educators, and parents to rise up and meet the demands of this difficult new reality. This decision is important because it is about safety. It is first and foremost to protect our kids and our teachers. It is impossible to adhere to social distancing measures in our classrooms and our schools. Oregon's education workforce is typically older and potentially more vulnerable to COVID-19. We need to make sure we're keeping our students, teachers, principals, and school staff safe as well.
The decision also means the cancellation of graduation, senior prom, and other ceremonies celebrating the Canby High School class of 2020. Brown said the Oregon Department of Education has developed new graduation requirements for seniors that accommodates the new distance learning model. Brown said all high school seniors who are on track to graduate prior to the statewide school closure will receive a passing grade for their courses, while those who are not on track for graduation will have to work with their school districts to develop, quote, creative and individualized plans to help them get back on track and meet the updated graduation requirements. The governor also extended her executive order for colleges and universities to practice distance learning for the remainder of their academic calendars, as well as protections for incoming freshmen who had existing admission or scholarship offers. Canby Superintendent Tripp Goodall said he received the news you just heard with, quote, a heavy heart. As a result of the governor's decision, Canby school district facilities will be closed indefinitely, Goodall confirmed. All school activities are also canceled, but continued learning is not. The Oregon Department of Education has directed all school districts to launch a distance learning for all plan by April 13th. Goodall said Canby schools are finalizing the online and offline components of the plan and will provide logistical information later this week on how to access distance learning. Now that the state has finalized its pathway to graduation directive for the class of 2020, high school families will also be receiving a separate communication about graduation requirements and continued distance learning options. Goodall said the district is doing the best they can to support staff, students, and families in these trying times, and that includes continuing to provide free meals for both pickup and bus delivery through the month of June. If your student has personal belongings at school that need to be picked up, the district will be developing a process that ensures safety and allows for pickup. While district staff are, quote, very saddened by the governor's decision, Goodall said they understand the ultimate goal is to slow the spread of COVID-19 and to keep the Canby community safe and healthy. This is a difficult time for all of us, he said. We will certainly miss seeing our students in their classrooms, but are committed to furthering their education with distance learning. We will get through this together. The Canby Fire District has clarified the COVID-era burn ban that is now in effect for residents in the wake of a more restrictive ban that drew the ire of many. Starting Wednesday, agricultural for-profit burning and rural outdoor burning will generally be allowed from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., while backyard burning within city limits remains closed. Recreational fires are also okay, as long as the smoke does not negatively impact your neighbors, the fire district said. Initially, the district had announced a full ban on outdoor burning, including agricultural backyard and even recreational burning, such as fire pits. Canby Fire Division Chief Matt English said the district's decision had followed a statewide request for Oregonians to voluntarily refrain from burning, but had also been based on local concerns, including those of a resident caring for one of their family members who is currently being treated for both asthma and COVID-19. Of course, it does make sense to limit smoke and air pollution in the midst of a global pandemic of a serious and even fatal respiratory illness. Smoke inhalation can cause upper respiratory symptoms that could be misdiagnosed as COVID-19, leading to unnecessary testing and the use of already scarce resources. Because of the limited capacity of the healthcare system, many of those with more mild cases of the disease are recovering at home, like the family we just mentioned, and the smoke from an outdoor burn could make their condition worse. Exposure to smoke and other forms of air pollution can also increase the risk of contracting COVID-19 or increase the severity of existing respiratory conditions. And finally, responding to an outdoor burn that gets out of control or smoke complaints from neighbors could distract from the ability of fire districts and other emergency services to provide critical medical care during the pandemic. It's a balancing act, English said. We have to balance people who would like to burn, and we have to balance those who have medical issues. The complete ban was not well received on social media, with a number of residents who look forward to a small barbecue or outdoor marshmallow roast as a distraction from the many other ways we are not able to enjoy the great outdoors right now. But English said that those he spoke with in person have all been understanding. Everybody I go out and talk to has been really good about receiving the message, he said. It's actually been giving me a lot of hope and happiness for humankind. English, who has seen the previous epidemic of SARS, H1N1, and all the rest, said they don't hold a candle to what we are experiencing now. This is definitely the epidemic of the century, he said. We're only trying to do what's best for the community and trying to make everybody safe, which isn't always easy. In this time of sudden need, many people in Canby have been feeling the need to give. Chief Brett Smith of the Canby Police Department has been hearing from some of them. We've had a lot of people call asking how they can help, the chief explained. They're looking to make a donation, donate PPE, stuff like that. And he added with a laugh, or they bring us food. People want to make sure we're not going hungry. With PPE, that's personal protective equipment, as I'm sure you know, or other donations, Chief Smith usually refers them to Canby Fire or to the Canby Center, where they're more needed. But the calls keep coming, as do the offers for help and the donations. This week, Canby Police received a donation so generous they knew they couldn't keep it all to themselves. A new grassroots initiative is underway in Canby, being dubbed Gift Cards for Giving, whereby kind-hearted souls buy gift cards at local businesses they want to support and then share those gift cards with someone who needs them. In this case, an anonymous donor went to the Wild Hair Saloon in Canby and bought enough gift cards to feed a large and very hungry army, which they then gave to the Canby Police Department as a token of how much their service to the community is appreciated. The donation was overwhelming, to say the least, but Chief Smith said the department leadership and the officers wanted to see if they could pass a portion of the donation, $2,500 in Wild Hair gift cards, onto the Canby Center, where demand at their food sharing programs has nearly tripled. Chief Smith said, "Oh, we felt just so appreciated. We felt so much gratitude for the donation. We wanted to pass that feeling of giving onto others in the community." So officers contacted Canby Center Director Ray Keene, who said the donated funds could certainly be put to good use, and Lieutenant George Tro dropped them off on Tuesday afternoon. "We're very grateful to the Wild Hare, the Canby Police Department, and the donor for their generosity," Keene said. "We've seen increased need, local families who have been impacted by layoffs and economic distress. This donation will really make a great impact." Canby has a reputation for generosity and sharing, but it makes more sense now than ever, according to Chief Smith. "We're a community," he said. "It's not just the Canby Police Department on our own out here. We're all in this together." A Malala man was arrested Friday for an alleged drunken driving crash in which he drove a vehicle carrying a mother and four children into a utility pole on South Malala Avenue. The crash occurred on Malala Avenue between Cascade Highway 213 and South Sprague Road. One adult passenger and four children were transported to an area hospital by a combination of ground and air ambulance. Sergeant Marcus Mendoza, a spokesman for the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office, said those injured included 29-year-old Crystal Larson and her four children, ranging in age from 1 to 6 years old. Initial evidence suggested that the child restraints were severely lacking and that two of the children may have been thrown from the vehicle during the crash. "There was only one child restraint seat in the vehicle," Sergeant Mendoza said. "I believe one child was restrained properly and at least two were not. There were two children who were reported to have been ejected from the vehicle." Sergeant Mendoza said one child sustained a fractured skull and Larson received some unspecified fractures. All five were listed in stable condition, he added. The driver, 30-year-old David Scott Larson of Malala, was arrested for DUII, reckless endangering, and fourth-degree assault, according to the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office. He was not seriously injured in the crash, according to Sergeant Mendoza. "He was checked by paramedics and remained on the scene for the investigation," he said, "then placed under arrest and lodged at the jail." Malala Avenue was closed for several hours Friday while Portland General Electric repaired the utility pole and a Clackamas County Criminal Reconstruction and Forensic Technician, that's CRAFT for the acronym, those guys worked the scene. The Executive Board of the Oregon School Activities Association, or OSAA, was scheduled to meet next week to revisit the matters of further suspending spring sports and canceling state championships. But as it turns out, the meeting will not be necessary. Following the governor's announcement that Oregon schools will be closed to in-person learning for the remainder of the academic year, the OSAA has canceled all remaining spring activities effective immediately. Sadly, distance competing is not an option for student athletes. Executive Director Peter Weber called the decision heart-wrenching for all members of the OSAA family. He said, "We empathize with students and school communities, especially our graduating seniors, but recognize that these cancellations will allow our collective focus to remain where it's most needed at this time, on the health and safety of all Oregonians." The OSAA had held out hope that an abbreviated spring season might be possible to help bring a sense of normalcy to these uncertain times. Now, more than ever, we need to apply the lessons learned through participation in education-based activities, teamwork, sacrifice, resilience, and play our role in adhering to the public health guidelines, he said. We all look forward to the day when we play again. Current OSAA policies prohibiting the use of school facilities and coaches from organizing or directing workouts and practices remain in effect until further notice. The OSAA Executive Board will meet in the coming weeks to discuss policies for summer activities, along with academic eligibility concerns for fall 2020 that have been expressed by member schools and families.
The Can Be Now podcast is brought to you in part by DirectLink, where technology meets tradition. Canby's longest-running and most innovative communications provider for over 116 years, DirectLink has worked hard to bring quality services to the area at affordable prices. From establishing phone lines in the early 1900s to being the first gigabit internet speed provider in Oregon, DirectLink paves the way for new technology so our neighbors can stay connected. Visit them online at directlink.coop to learn more about their communication services and community activities.
Hey friends, it's me, James, back one more time for my favorite segment of the show, which as you know by now is the Patreon shout-out. You know that especially in the midst of this COVID-19 pandemic, that accurate, timely, and local journalism is never the more valuable as it is now. And so we encourage you to do what you can to support us here at the Can Be Now podcast, Tyler Franke, Tyler Claussen, and those wonderful folks who are helping bring you this news. And some of the folks that we want to shout out today are the coolest people in the world. We know them as our Can Be Now Plus members. And this week, it's a personal honor of mine to give a special thank you to Bob and Luana Hill. Now, I know Bob and Luana. They are some of the most kind and generous and warm-hearted people you could possibly imagine. They really are some of the coolest people. Sometimes I say that and you think, no, he's just joking. I'm really serious this time. Bob and Luana are amazing and we are grateful to have them as Can Be Now Plus members. And if you would like to make a contribution to help us continue to do this work that we love, you can find out more about how to be a supporter on Patreon by visiting canbenowpod.com/plus. And Bob and Luana Hill, thank you so much for being amazing people and supporters of the Can Be Now podcast.
The coronavirus pandemic has affected many local businesses, but few more directly than bars and restaurants, which are under specific restrictions that have drastically changed the ways that they are allowed to operate, or in some cases forced them to close altogether. On the Can Be Conversation today, we'll be checking in with a few of our local restaurant owners who are finding ways to adapt in this strange new world. First up, we are delighted to welcome back onto the Can Be Now podcast, Joan Monin of The Wild Hair. Hi, Joan.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good.
Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely, anytime, when you have time.
Yeah.
How are you holding up?
We are holding our own here. We're staying busy, which is great. We have adapted some new hours at both locations. So we're open Monday through Friday, 11:30 to 7:30, for takeout only.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure that everyone listening is aware, but just to make sure we're all on the same page, obviously
Last month, the governor came out with new restrictions, an executive order that was part of the effort to slow down the coronavirus pandemic, as we mentioned, one of which was requiring basically bars to close altogether, restaurants to close their dining areas, only allowed now to offer to-go delivery or takeout. Curbside pickup is allowed in cases where that's possible. So that is obviously a big change for the Wild Hare, which is normally just a fun place to go and hang out. And I want to ask you about that. But first, I want to, Joan, see if you can take us back to that. I think it was the night of that announcement. You posted something about it on Facebook, or the Wild Hare page did. And you just kind of had a team meeting. You guys sort of a little bit of a come to Jesus moment and just kind of talked a little bit about how things were going to look and just how people were feeling. Can you give us a little insight into just kind of set that stage for us? I'm interested in, because you guys have such a close-knit crew there.
Yeah, I follow international, national news pretty closely. So I was kind of following the trends of what was going on.
Okay.
And I was noticing that the state of Washington had put some rules around bars and restaurants and things like that, and I just knew that we were going to be following suit, and I kind of want to give my staff a heads up of what's going to be coming our way. So I brought everyone together and had a pretty emotional meeting with them, and I think everyone was kind of shocked to see the emotions coming out of me that were they just weren't really paying attention to what was happening. And so I broke the news to him that in the next couple of days we would most likely be closing our doors for, we don't know how long it's going to be happening. And
wow, so I didn't realize. So you actually had this meeting before the formal announcement. Okay, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So we had.
Can I borrow your crystal ball sometime? That would be great.
Yeah, right. And I told him that they were going to have to, look into getting unemployment, that everyone would be being laid off. And that we would try our best to keep some folks on payroll, the ones that we could. Kind of went from there and created a whole new reality of what our days look like.
Yeah.
Sorry, this is the work phone. But
takeout order.
Yes, we love that. We love to hear that. So we adopted some new work hours and laid everybody off, and I think everyone has gone and gotten unemployment. I offered immediately to feed all of my staff 2 meals a day. Anyone who wants to come in and eat, get their to-go food to take home, to keep them so they don't have to go out and buy their food. Just trying to help out wherever I can.
Yeah That's amazing. You mentioned Washington. I'm now remembering things have changed so much and so fast.
Yeah,
but yeah, back then the original kind of discussion was the takeout thing sort of came out of left field. The thinking was more that they would close completely as Washington did. And I know some restaurant groups were kind of even pushing for that because that opens up the possibility of certain, I think, relief funding that may not otherwise be available when you're ordered to close, as opposed to just trying to stay open in a different way.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. So how has it been kind of emotionally, I want to ask, for you and your staff? You mentioned kind of the emotion of it. I know we've been in to get takeout a couple times, and it is hard coming into that quiet, empty place. You know, I'm kind of getting a little emotional even just talking about it, as silly as it might seem.
Specifically the night that we had the meeting, I have 2 locations, so I brought both of the staff together. Not everybody always knows who's at each location. So I took a moment to have everyone go around the room and introduce themselves and say what location they worked at, say their name and how long they've been working for the company. And you start going around the room and all these people are, I've been with Wild Hare for 10 years, 8 years, 6 years, 5 years. And then you go to a whole new batch of kids that we had just hired on for our summer, getting ramped up for summer.
Right.
And then, all these young kids who are all excited to have their first job and being mentored and all that. And that was kind of the moment where I got really emotional, because you're listening to all of these senior staff members that have devoted so much to the company and waiting on people and creating a great environment and a good, you know, experience for everybody. And then it was just, I don't know, it just kind of hit me, because like all these people have been with me for so long and I've never been put in this position ever before where I've had to lay anybody off.
Yeah.
And not only, you know, one or two, it's everybody is being laid off. And so I tend to be a fixer. I want to fix things. I want to make things right. And when you're just feeling so helpless that you can't, it's pretty unreal. So
Yeah, the layoff thing is tough for me too, and I'm unfortunately know that we're heading into a time where we'll probably see it more and see it in more industries, just with reading the tea leaves a little bit of what we're seeing with the overall economy.
Everything kind of starts closing, then everything else is rippling out. So,
yeah, it's just hard, right? With like layoff, these folks are losing their jobs through no fault of their own. I mean, that's the kind of raw deal of it that really sucks. But that's cool that you're able to offer food for them. I know that that's a huge, I mean, that's one huge check mark that is that they can take off the biggest part of their, biggest part of their worry list. Yeah.
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 And also try and keep some sort of community going, you know, checking in with them. And when they come in, you know, you get to have your virtual hug from 6 feet away. And
right.
See their face and kind of, you know, just how are you? How's it going? Is there anything I can do for you? It just keeps everybody moving the ball forward and keeping connected, which I think is really important.
Yeah. And there's just that hierarchy of needs list, you know, and food is right there at the top. If you have that, then you can focus on a lot of different kinds of things, you know, because there's a lot that they have to now worry about in terms of where can I find a job somewhere or whatever. But if you don't have food, you can't really worry about anything else. You have to figure that out, you know. That's
and
cool.
I did explain to them, you know, I understand that your families come first, and if you have to go out and find another job right now, I mean, I completely respect it and understand it, and hopefully when we open our doors back up, we can have a spot for you and we can resume, you know, business as usual. But at the same time, people have to support their families and pay their bills. And I have a couple of my staff members that went and got jobs at Costco.
Yeah, and I know, I think I even saw you mentioning to people that when Safeway and Fred Meyer and all of them were hiring, that you kind of were like, hey guys, you know, check this out as well. So
For sure.
Cool. Well, I don't want to keep you too much longer, Joan, but I also want to ask, I know that you've seen some really cool things happen just in terms of the community supporting you and your staff. And just everything that you've got going at the Wild Hare. Yeah. Can you tell us, I guess now that we're all down in the dumps, can you encourage us a little bit?
Will you pick me up?
Yeah, right?
Yeah, well, it started with a phone call from a longtime friend of mine that actually she lives in another city in the state of Oregon, and she follows me on Facebook, and she and her husband watch from a distance and see how involved I am with my community and staff and everything. And she called me up and said that they wanted to make a donation to purchase $1,000 in gift cards and have me distribute them as I see fit, or, you know, however, if I wanted to give them to my staff, if I wanted to give them to the community. And I just always have had the attitude that we're stronger when we stay together, and I wanted to help my community some way. So we donated a fair amount to the Canby Center, and we opened it up to anyone, you know, that feels that they have someone in the community that would like the $25 gift card, to please email me, joan@thewildhairsaloon.com, and I'd get them a gift card.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, oh my gosh, the floodgates opened up.
Mm-hmm.
And they called back again and made another donation to my Oregon City location. So this couple donated $2,000 of their, you know.
Oh my gosh.
I know. Unbelievable. And wow. Then I had an ex, and this is, you know, I had two ex Canby High School graduates
mm-hmm.
call me and make pretty big donations. as well. One of them is a local business, and he and his partner donated $500 to the cause. And then I had another Cambie High School grad call me and donate $3,000 to the Cambie Police Department for them to use with their support, you know, their non-support, all of their staff there.
So amazing.
They could donate it back to the community however they see fit. If they ran across people in town that, you know, they wanted to pass them out to, whatever. But I think for me, the thing is that these are kids that grew up in our town, and they don't necessarily maybe not live here. They might live here, but they were impacted one way or another growing up in Cambie, and their heart is still in Cambie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And this kind of came out of left field for me too, this gift card thing and how it's just blossomed. I know the Cambie Area Chamber, which was inspired by what you just described, is now doing this gift cards for giving program where they're encouraging folks to do this, to buy gift cards to local businesses and either, you know, give them to the chamber to donate or give them to a specific nonprofit. But it's just such a cool, because it checks all of these boxes. You know, it helps the local businesses, it helps the local nonprofits that are now seeing a lot higher demand, and it helps needy people in our community. It's so cool, how it just keeps giving in that way.
So it's pretty cool to be part of that drive that's happening.
So my last question for you, Joan, is just, I mean, with your crystal ball that you've already mentioned that you have. Taking everything into account, the ups and the downs that we've seen even just in this past month, can you describe just a little bit looking forward, you know, what your outlook is? Do you have a deep concern? Do you have a hopeful outlook? Can you just sort of sum that up for us looking ahead?
I think I have a hopeful outlook. I really do. I think that there's always a silver lining in everything, and I think that people are just going to have a new sense of reality, that they're not going to take things for granted anymore, that they're going to come back stronger and wanting to work harder and have a sense of community about themselves. I don't know that we'll be back right away to, you know, the heyday is what I like to call it. I mean, we were rocking and rolling on all cylinders. You know, I don't know that we'll be at that capacity right away. It might take us 6 months to a year to be fully staffed again. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like the folks that are suffering the hardest will come back from this a lot stronger and more dedicated, I think. You know, I think this is kind of just a reality for all of us, and just, we do need to take care of each other, and we are here in this together. Nobody is not being affected by this. Everyone is being affected by this one way or another. Some, unfortunately, just more so than others.
Absolutely. Well, Joan, thank you so much for taking time out to share what you're experiencing over there at the Wild Hare. Before we let you go, tell us again the new hours for takeout and the number, please.
Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. and our phone number at the Cambie Wild Hare is 503-651-4273, and our Oregon City location is 503-303-7963.
Awesome.
And then we do have a great family four-pack special that changes weekly.
And it
feeds a family of four for $25.
That's been very handy. We appreciate
that. People really have been liking that.
So. Yeah, I even see people asking, like, on the Facebook page, what's the special this week? And, you know, really getting psyched
another
up.
Another great thing that also I just might like to add here at the very end is that there's been so many businesses that have called us up for takeout. So Wilson Construction, I'd just like to do a huge shout-out for them. 3 to 4 times a week, they're calling us up, getting food to go for anywhere from 30 to 60 of their employees each day. Columbia Distributing ordered 200 sandwiches for us. I mean, just the list just goes on and on.
That's awesome.
So that's been really, really helpful. But those companies that are keeping moving forward, that they're using the restaurants to help feed their staff and whatnot. So yeah, that's been awesome.
We're all in this together.
Yeah. Yep, we are.
Cool. All right. Thanks, okay. Joan. Hang in there.
Thanks, Frankie. Thanks.
I'm here with Derek Hill at Advantage Mortgage, and you had some advice you were wanting to put out there to prospective home buyers.
Yeah, you know, it's so crazy out there right now. The housing market is just blazing fast, especially in the first-time home buyer range of prices.
Oh, cool.
So it's imperative that you find out all the ins and outs. You know, how much can you afford? What's your payment range that you want to be in? What type of loan program you're qualified for? Because there's a lot of no money down loan programs that are available, but they really might not be best for you. In my experience, those loans have an increased payment that if they had a little bit of money down, they wouldn't need. But the great thing about Canby is it's eligible for the USDA loan program, which is a no money down loan. But my point is, it's just super important to get it figured out before you start looking, because I've seen customers go find the house they love, they call me and they're like, you know, let's go. Right. And then by the time we get everything dialed in, which can be in 4 hours, yeah, that house is gone.
Yeah.
And so it's just way better. So I just want to make sure that consumers know, give us a call. Just give us, you know, let's meet, let's talk about it, let's get everything dialed in so that you know exactly what you're up against, and then you're ready. You can make that offer and kaflooey, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And people can find you on your website or just give you a call?
Yeah, they can go to findtheadvantage.com or call 266-5800, obviously 503 area code. And we love to chit-chat, and we have, you know, 8 or 9 different loan officers here in the Canby office that would love to sit down with somebody and work with them.
Cool. Thanks, Derek.
Derek Hill, NMLS number 50183, Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 177059, Equal Housing Opportunity.
All right, and now from one of our more longtime restaurant owners here in Canby to one of our newer ones, we're now welcoming back on as well the owner and proprietor and all things wine extraordinaire, Matt Morrissey of Wayward Sandwiches. Hi, Matt.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, good, man. How are you holding up?
We're holding up pretty good. You know, it's none of this is ideal, that's for sure. But the support here in Canby, honestly, has been really extraordinary. You know, far surpassing anything that we could have reasonably expected or hoped for. You know, we're not setting any sales records, that's for sure. But we're, you know, we're feeling the love. I'll put it that way. And we feel fortunate to be here.
Sure. I think one of the difficulties when I think, and I mentioned, I feel kind of, you know, maybe even a little more awful about you guys just because you're new. It seemed like you were just hitting your stride when all this stuff happened. But also, I know you had started doing some pretty popular events, and that had really some weekly events. And it seemed like that had really been part of the key to some of your early growth and success you've been seeing in these first few months. Is that true with the trivia night and some of the other things you've been doing, the wine tasting, stuff like that, which, of course, yeah, is not allowed anymore?
No, for sure. That was a big question mark going into all of this when the, you know, the directive came down from the state was, you know, what was the support base going to look like without, you know, some of these events that, like you say, that have really become quite popular in a short period of time. And, you know, what we found is that we really immediately turned our attention to Justin, the chef, and myself. You know, we really turned our attention to trying to translate some of those events into other things. So for instance, like the wine tasting we were doing, we started doing, you know, sort of a wine six packs, that people could take home with them, that sort of, we had, put our, seal of approval on. Those have been very popular, which has helped sort of supplement some of the wine business that we you know wouldn't have lost. And then, you know, there's no way easily to replace some of the trivia and the other things that we're doing, although we're actually working on a virtual trivia game right now. We won't do it this coming week weekend because of Easter, but we will we'll likely do it the weekend after. Yeah, that'll be fun. We'll promote that. We don't have all the details sorted out quite yet, but it involves Google Forms and Zoom conferencing and all sorts of stuff. It'll be an event, that's for sure.
Yeah, hopefully. Love it.
It'll be a nightmare.
I've been hearing about people doing stuff like virtual happy hours and whatnot. So if they can pull that off, you know.
Well, and you know, so yeah, even and so we're actually this Friday we're doing coming up we're doing an event with Whiskey Hill Winery, local folks. They're doing, Chris is the winemaker, is going to taste through three wines with folks on Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
And then give people a kind of a virtual tour of the winery and then a lot of the equipment that they use. And it's going to be a kind of a fun thing.
I love
that. We're selling the wines for that right now. And you know, so you come and you pick up the three pack of wines and then you pick up like the Zoom meeting ID. To log in on Friday at 6 p.m. It's sort of a neat thing. But back to what you were saying, though, so what we've really tried to do is and find other ways to engage people and sort of work with the circumstances that have been given us. We've started packaging a lot of our, you know, sauces and different things as grab and go. We've been doing and that's helped a lot. We've tried to do sort of a gift card deal, giving, you know, people 10 on 50 free, just, you know, anything you can do to sort of, you know, keep people in the forefront of your mind of,
yeah.
You know, keep you in the forefront of people's minds and also offering, you know, values or offering products that will be helpful to people during, you know, this event, this bizarre, you know,
yeah,
set of circumstances that we're all dealing with one way or the other.
Right. This strange new world. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very cool. Well, I have to ask, with your gourmet taste and whatnot, is there any interesting quarantine food or quarantine recipes that what does Matt Morrissey eat for when he's quarantined? Not that you are. You're obviously working a lot.
Yeah, I was gonna say most of my interesting quarantine fare is cold sandwiches.
Right.
No, you know, we've been sort of playing around with some stuff. You know, we've been right before everything hit, we were really starting to do a lot more sort of dinner entree type stuff and not obviously steering away from sandwiches. That's the heart of what we do, but you know, just interesting new and different things. And so we're tinkering. You know, Justin's always back there. We've got this amazing, fermented habanero sauce that it's ridiculously spicy. I asked for a little bit of it on a sandwich yesterday, and they spread it on both sides of the bread thinly. But it was so hot that it was the type of thing where you have to like, if you stop eating it, your mouth is on fire. So like, you just have to eat the whole thing.
Right, just power through.
Straight.
Yeah.
You power through it.
Right.
And so it was one of those scenarios, but it's so good. We're playing with that, and we're playing with some other new things. So we're making do, but
okay.
I don't think there's one specific coronavirus recipe I can point to.
Yeah.
But,
I'm just waiting for the peanut butter and tuna fish sandwich to come out.
I'll
be excited for that.
You know, that's going to be
disgusting.
It's going to be a while. You know, I think before you see that one, but just
okay.
Stay tuned.
We'll
stay tuned.
Wait for the supply chain to really break down before that happens. Well, great, Matt. We really appreciate you taking time out, and thank you as well for as you mentioned that those six packs of wine, those last me in my quarantine almost a whole day now. So I appreciate that.
You have a problem, Tyler.
Well, you know what? This is not the time or place. But I will let you give the new and updated hours that you guys are doing and your number, just in case folks want to get some tasty sandwiches.
Thank you so much. We're actually keeping our what had been our regular hours. So we're open 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Sunday through Wednesday, and then 11 to 8 Thursday, Friday, Saturday. But we are doing, in addition to takeout, we're doing delivery as well. So, as long as this thing goes, you can call us anytime between those hours. And as long as, you know, for delivery, we're trying to keep it, reasonably and can be. We're here, and anything we can do, just let us know.
Awesome. And that phone number is?
503-266-3100.
All right. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hang in
there. Appreciate you. Will do. You too.
Can Be Then is brought to you by Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop, and they're open daily. Even though the store is currently closed for walk-in sales, they offer a variety of online shopping experiences along with, hey, check this out, free delivery in Canby. Connect with them through email at retrorevivaloc@gmail.com. We begin the fourth and final part of our look back at Canby's fire history on September 16th, 1960. Firefighters responded to an early morning fire that day at Dr. A.G. McDonald's dental office at 121 North Grant Street in downtown Canby. Dr. McDonald lived in an apartment above the clinic, but that's where the fire actually began. The blaze spread quickly and it destroyed his bed, furniture, most of his personal effects, and all of his clothing. Fortunately, the dentist lived in a time where there was such a thing as bedclothes, and he was wearing them. Also fortunate, none of his dental equipment was damaged by the fire. So, for some of our older listeners, if you were wondering why your dentist showed up for your appointment wearing his pajamas that one time, hopefully this explains things. One morning, there was a loud boom that was heard all over Canby. I know what you're thinking. Hey, yeah, I heard it too. But no. This was back on September 3rd, 1982, and this actually happened. It was about 9:45 in the morning when a large fir tree was struck by lightning, causing the boom, and also killing an extremely valuable broodmare. The horse, Wild Clarion, was owned by Elwood and Alice Feist, and was valued at about $20,000. The horse survived the initial strike, although Doc Mike Harms, the veterinarian who examined her, said she had a singed streak of hair where the lightning had entered her, as well as several exit wounds. I don't see how she's still alive, Doc told the Canby Herald at the time. Sadly, the horse was suffering internal bleeding from the incident and eventually had to be put to sleep. One of the last daughters of the 1967 Kentucky Derby winner Proud Clarion, Wild Clarion had enjoyed some success racing at Portland Meadows before a scandal apparently prompted her retirement to Canby. In 1980, she had to forfeit a $1,600 purse she had won after urinalysis showed a medication prohibited in two-year-old horses. Her trainer, Ron Medeiros, had been ordered to pay a $200 fine. Crazily, another lightning bolt exploded another fir tree on North Holly Street later that same day, raining smoking debris onto the home of Al Ehrenfeld. A large chunk of wood put a hole through Ehrenfeld's living room ceiling. The strike knocked me goofy, like getting hit in the head with a baseball bat, he later said. The strike also caused a small power outage, blew out several of Ehrenfeld's windows and all of his electrical fuses, and rained debris onto his car. So maybe this explains the booms. Speaking of explosions, one caused by a natural gas leak ripped apart a Canby restaurant called the Gold Garden in the early morning hours of December 17, 1984. The restaurant, located at 206 Southeast 1st Street, had just opened for business a few months earlier. It had previously been a restaurant called the Honey Bear, and before that, an A&W. The explosion tore off the rear section of the Gold Garden and littered the nearby railroad tracks with debris. The owner, Vientron, estimated the damage at $90,000. The blast was reportedly heard as far away as Barlow, about 2 miles to the south. Brad Baker, a dispatching supervisor, said he heard the explosion at his home about a mile and a half away from the blast site. Anybody who was awake at that time would have heard it, Baker told the Oregonian. On November 7, 1987, a fire broke out at a shed at Maple Street Park owned by Canby Kids, a youth sports club that was sponsored by the city at the time. Today, it remains active in town as a nonprofit organization. Anyway, the shed was used to store sports uniforms and other equipment, and within minutes, it was fully involved. It took a dozen firefighters to bring it under control, and though no one was harmed, it was estimated that over 200 football jerseys were lost in the blaze. Total damage in excess of $20,000 was reported. Arson, firefighters quickly determined, finding evidence of a liquid accelerant. They believe the suspect had been used a wooden plank as a battering ram to gain access to the facility before setting it alight. A week later, a 17-year-old high school student was charged in juvenile court in connection with the fire. Detectives refused to release his name, but said he would be charged with the equivalent of second-degree burglary and second-degree arson. And our final story will take us all the way to 2005. On June 16th of that year, 40 to 50 people were gathered for a meeting at Canby Alliance Church at 900 North Juniper Street when a fire broke out. The building was quickly evacuated, but Pastor Tim Barton and two other congregation members lingered in search of an unaccounted for teen. Barton went to the offices and called 911 before becoming trapped and disoriented in the thick black smoke. "It was dark," he recalled. "I could feel the heat and the pressure, so I dropped the phone, got to my knees, and tried to crawl out of there." He managed to find an exit door, but he didn't crawl out, he was blown out. The intense pressure from the blaze blew Barton an estimated 20 feet across the parking lot. Fortunately, he sustained only minor injuries, scratches, and bruises. According to the newspaper reports, the fire was started by a 16-year-old boy with developmental disabilities who was playing with a candle and some paper in a storeroom. The teen was not charged in the case due to the lack of evidence. The fire caused an estimated $750,000 in damage. The Canby Alliance Church was later rebuilt at the same location, bigger and better than ever. Tim Barton, still the pastor. Several large beams were salvaged from the wreckage of the old church. They were fashioned into a cross that forms one of the decorative centerpieces in the church's new sanctuary today. And that concludes our look back at some of the most interesting and colorful moments from the history of the Canby Fire District. We have many more stories to tell you, but it'll have to wait. Till next time on Canby Then.
The Canby Now podcast is brought to you in part by the Wild Hair Saloon, where Canby goes to eat and have fun. Lifelong Canby residents Darren and Joan Monin founded the Wild Hair 16 years ago, and as their business has grown and expanded, they've continued to give back to the community they love. They're one of the biggest supporters of school activities, youth sports, local events, and even this podcast. They have a heart for Canby, plain and simple.
They also have some of the best food and drinks on the planet.
Did I forget to mention that?
No, it's all right. I'm going to mention it. It's no accident that residents voted them the best restaurant and best service through the Canby Area Chamber of Commerce last year. Happy hour daily from 3 to 6. Kids eat free on Mondays, live music and breakfast on the weekends. And they have great salads and other healthy options to help you keep your New Year's resolutions. Check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City, or on their website, TheWildHairSaloon.net. The Canby Now podcast is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. We also feature the vocal talents of Joyce Struby and James Walden. So round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. Find more of her work at Olivia13.com.
The Canby Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us. Canby.
The Cambie Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Cambie's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.